about having my having heard such a conversation as you have mentioned with such and such is no more true than the rumor that is now coming out of New Vrindavan to support the innovative initiation of women into sannyas. And then she's quoted as being quoted as saying that Prabhupada had wanted to give her sannyas. I am hearing now that women becoming sannyas was authorized by Prabhupada because he was going to give me and a few other women sannyas. So I can say from personal experience that this story is not true. So, regarding stories, evidence, it says, who told, Gaur Keshava told us one the other day, that it's very common among pundits that if they want to quote some Shastric evidence but they don't quite have it in hand, they, you know, want to fudge a little bit, then they say that it's in the Skanda Purana. Because the Skanda Purana is three times the size of Srimad Bhagavatam. When they ask, well, where in the Skanda Purana? Well, I don't remember just now, but it's there in the Skanda Purana. So be skeptical of Skanda Purana, conversations with Mother Jadarani, and any other kind of evidence. Prabhupada said, I saw a letter from Prabhupada. It says somewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't remember which volume. Or any other such evidence. Be skeptical. Believe nothing. Any questions?
I didn't quite get the first part. What was she refuting? The sannyas, I understood. But what else?
There was a claim that Prabhupada had personally told her that if women giving Bhagavatam class is an agitation to the men, then it would be better that she not give class. That rumor is untrue. That's not to say that women should give Bhagavatam class, but it is to say that that argument against it is fallacious. That you prove an argument false doesn't mean that you've refuted the conclusion, but it means some other reason has to appear. Otherwise, you win.
Otherwise, a woman can still give class.
No, that's what I just didn't say. What I said is that this argument against it has fallen apart.
Okay. You should not trust neither woman nor man. You should trust neither woman nor man.
Yes. Chanakya Pandit says, never trust a woman nor a politician. So if we're going to stick to our principle, we'll add, nor anyone else. Shut up.
You can't believe their letter.
That's also true. Maybe she's lying.
She's got a lot of motive.
But no, it strikes doubt on it. Yeah, that's there in black and white. She denies it. If he comes and says, well, I just spoke to her, then, well, she denies it. Then it's a question of who are you going to believe.
And it becomes so dubious that it's just not even worth considering.
An argument like that's not going to go very far. She told me personally, well, she denies it. Well, that's that. My word against yours. Or her word against yours. Another point. Yes. We're not arguing the point of whether women should give class right now. Maybe we'll argue that tomorrow. It's a really juicy topic. She sent me a whole little few things about it. I'll look at it and see tomorrow. Today we won't have any introductions. We'll start with a fight instead. The topic of the fight is man creates God. Man creates God, if you ask me. We'll divide up into four, and each quarter of the room can select one honorable devotee to defend our philosophy, and one scurrilous karmi, speculator, to propose that man creates God. So we'll take some reports. We'll save the heroic opponents of Indradaitya Maharaj till left. I heard some interesting arguments. Let's hear some of the arguments that came forward. Pro or con, what were strong or what were weak, where did you get messed up? Some reports from the audience or from the participants. Yes.
I became atheist, Maharaj.
Good. I hope you had good reasons.
One of the points I was mentioning was good, is that what's his name? Jayakanda, we had some mental problems for a while. And Jayakanda came with the argument that you have a father. So you may not know your father, but does it mean that you have no father? So on the basis of this, then it
started getting you. He started making you a little Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
Yes, some other... Yes, Prahlad?
Basically, it's impossible to convert an atheist. Doesn't want to listen to anything. He just talks and talks and doesn't give the person a chance to speak. Yeah.
I saw a lot of bullying going on out there. Bullying and bluffing. I saw a very good argument brought against Vegavan, and Vegavan very deftly put it aside by saying, "That's not the topic." It was right on the point. He said, "That's not the topic." I heard some appeals to Shastra, some devotees who were quoting Parampara. This is what the sages say, this is what the Shastras say. Who tried that argument? Come on, I know you were out there. Who gave some arguments from authority like that? Come on, admit it. Okay. Right. How far did you get?
Well, I said that I got this talk about the scriptures. And he said, well, I don't have to believe you.
That's right. And that's the response. If you try and bring it up again, which is what you did, he'll just tell you again, I've got my authorities and you've got yours. I've got the people I believe in and you've got yours. What will be the effect of scriptural argument under such circumstance? No effect. If someone doesn't accept your authority, then you've either got to give him good reasons why he should accept your authority, or you've got to have recourse to some other form of proof. Because you can't quote to me from the Bible if I don't accept the Bible. You can't quote to me from the Magna Carta if I don't accept the Magna Carta. You can't quote to me an authority that I don't agree to accept and expect me to capitulate. It just becomes another form of circular argument. It's true because it's true. You should accept it because you should accept it. All right, what was the best argument brought against Indradyumna Maharaj? Indradyumna Maharaj, what was the best argument brought against you?
Well, the one that they kept trying to give to me was that because there's order within human society, therefore any law which we see in creation must mean that there's a lawmaker behind it. That was the strongest point given.
It's called the argument from design. Because we see argument, because we see order in nature, we must assume that there's intelligence behind it. Argument from design. If you see a clock, the standard form of the argument is that if you see a watch and you see that it's carefully designed and working according to the design, you can understand that there must be an intelligence behind it. Similarly, the cosmic manifestation, having order and precision and purpose, or at least order and precision and so on, must have intelligent direction behind it. This is the famous argument from design. which Srila Prabhupada very often uses, and which is a strong argument. The demons may not wish to accept it, but it's strong. Are there strong arguments brought against you? Not so many. But Partha Prabhu, he just kept pushing that one, which is a good strategy. When you've got a strong argument, just keep pushing on it. Just keep pushing on it. Now, the best argument I heard in favor of our Krishna conscious point of view came from Srila Das. Srila Das gave what I consider to be the first class argument as follows. Bhagavan says, man creates God. And there, by the way, there were all sorts of other attempts by our atheists to explain why man creates God. That because man has various psychological needs and so on and so on and so on. And then people argue, well, no, that's not true. Man doesn't have such psychological needs, or that's not the reason why man believes in God, or this or that or the other thing. But Srila Das, I think, went right to the root of the question. And he said, where's Srila? He's back there. He said, what do you mean by God? Oh, very often a useful thing to do in any argument. Call for a definition. What do you mean by God? You say man creates God. First thing is, what is God? What do you mean by God? Answer?
Creator.
Hmm?
Some idea on mental concept.
No.
Creator?
No, we don't even say the creator. We have a better philosophy than that. We have a better philosophy than saying that God is the creator. Cause of all causes. When we speak of God in this argument, we mean the cause of all causes, the cause of everything, the origin of all emanations. All right? You accept that? Our argument can proceed with that definition in mind. By God, we mean the cause of all causes. Okay? Even Bhagavan said, all right, you know, we'll swallow that definition. God equals the cause of all causes. Or the cause of everything. God is the cause of everything. Okay? Now, the next stage is man the cause of everything? Are you the cause of everything? Do you hold that man is the cause of everything? Do you create, and anyone who wants to defend that is going to be in hot water. Did you create the sun? Did you create the moon? Then man equals something caused. So, yes?
The question is put forward, how do you know that God is the cause of everything?
By definition. When I speak by this word God, I mean the origin of everything. What the nature of that origin of everything is, so on, that we can discuss later. But by this word God, I mean the cause of everything. And man is something caused. So if you say, man creates God, then, in terms of our argument, you're saying, something caused...
creates the cause of everything.
Creates the cause of everything. What's that? It's nonsense, that's what it is. You want to defend this nonsense? Something caused creates the cause. So my question is that there must be a cause. Everything has a cause. Name something that doesn't have a cause. Are you prepared to argue that there's no cause of everything? That something comes without a cause? Are you against cause and effect?
Many causes.
Many causes. Many causes? Many causes of everything? That's just to say that the cause of everything it has multifarious, you know, units or features that we can talk about also. We're prepared to accept that. Our philosophy will deal with that.
Somebody may say, well, this is why I don't believe in God, because man created the cause of everything.
Man creates the cause of everything.
Yeah, that's
the concept.
Wait a second. Man creates the cause of everything.
According to what you said.
But my point is that everything has a source. And man is not that source. So there's some other source. And how can man create his own source? That's like saying that the son is the father of his father.
Yeah, but these other things we can talk about later. We're talking about the concept of God now.
Concept is another question. My point is that there's a source, that everything comes from a source. Things are just happening.
Things are just happening.
You're not saying anything.
You're saying that something just happens.
You're not saying anything. You're not explaining anything. You're not defining anything. You're not making anything clear. You're just saying things are what they are.
That's about, at least I'm not saying that it's something which they don't.
So you're saying, what?
At least I'm not saying that the cause is not, is something which it is not.
Cause is not something which it's not, it's something which it is. I agree with that too. God is what he is. Even the Bible says, I am what I am. You're going around in circles.
But your cause, you said that it's God. I'm saying this cause of everything is not necessarily the God which you have in your temple. But I'm saying
that's another question. Deal with that. When he says the God that you're talking about is not necessarily the God that's in our temples, how do you answer that? I say, all right, there's a source of everything, but it's not necessarily the God that you have in your temple. Doesn't mean I mean except your old man with a beard or your young blue god with a flute. What do you say when he says that?
That's bananas. But what I'm saying... what I'm saying is that you're saying that God is something caused by God.
No.
Well, this is...
No, you haven't answered my point. I'm saying... that, all right, there's a source of everything, but then don't expect me to believe that it's this little blue boy in your temple, or it's the little old man with a beard. Adiraj.
Well, again, by definition, God can only be one God, one cause of all causes.
I want another answer. That doesn't satisfy me. Yes?
Well, there is the little blue boy, for example. First one to deal with the source of everything.
Loud, please.
First, we can look at God as the source of all causes.
Good. That didn't say it loud enough. But if you did say it loud enough, it's a good argument.
What did he say?
He's saying, in effect, that this is a side question. This we can decide later, whether God's playing a flute or he has a beard or what he looks like and what he does. That we'll talk about later. The first thing is, not only that we're talking about whether there's a source of everything, you just agreed. You just agreed that there's a source of everything. That's my point. Stick me with it. Stick with me with it. If I said, all right, there's a source of everything, but I don't see why I should... All right, you agree. Don't let me get away with backtracking. So you agree, there is a source of everything. Alright, you make up your mind. You're going to just do that? That's like Nixon, this statement is inoperative. Later you make all these statements, and then later you say this statement is no longer operational. Was that the word you used? No longer operational? That is just taking your words out and giving them. Giving out your words and taking them back. Just let me know as you go along when you mean it and when you don't. But my point is that there must be a source of everything. So we're no back. You haven't sent me back any further. At least I dumped your argument that it may be blue or it may be this or that.
Maharaj, I have a question.
Okay.
I think that what you're guilty of is word juggling, in the sense that you're making us accept a definition for something which doesn't exist. This is the point. You're giving us
whether God exists.
You're giving us a definition. Thereby, whatever the definition is, thereby we have to accept the principle that something does exist by what you're defining. But our point is that there's not even, your God, the word God shouldn't even be defined because there is no God. There's no word in the Chinese dictionary, there's not even a word for God.
Another question of word jugglery. But the question is that man creates God. So we're dealing with this point. What do you mean by God? Any argument, you have to define your terms. So what do you mean by God? By God, we mean the source of everything. Now, if you want to argue against the existence of a source of everything, that's a separate question. But the first point is
that's
that...
the point.
So you're saying there's no source of everything.
We're saying things just... It's a mirage. It's just unreal, temporary. Not, it's just something we're just dreaming
of. Answer it! He says everything's a mirage. Standard Mayavadi argument.
With your head also made
everything. He says everything's a mirage. Oh, we accept your definition. God means the source of everything. That's fine. But we don't accept that there is a God, then. Everything's a mirage. It's just everything's mental concoction. It's all coming out of your own little noggin there. Answer it!
Where's the mirage come from? What?
Where's the mirage come from? Accepting that this is all a mirage. A mirage is something. It's not nothing. Where's it come from, buddy?
But, I can answer that question.
Go ahead.
Mirage comes from illusion. As soon as the illusion is dispelled, then we see actually everything is void. There's nothing. Neither you exist, nor I exist, nor anything we see exists.
So my question is, next question. He says that it's coming from illusion. When the illusion is dispelled, there's only void.
Where's the illusion?
He wants to know where illusion comes from, buddy.
Illusion comes from the Brahman, it's temporarily covered.
Answer? Answer? No, I don't accept that answer. He says now that he asked, well, where does illusion come from? He says it comes from Brahman. Answer. Let's have an answer to that.
Where does Brahman come from?
No, I don't accept that. I want a better answer.
It's covered by what?
In the accepted source.
Ah. Ah. That's the point. Then you accepted a source. If everything comes from illusion, and illusion comes from Brahman, then you accept Brahman as the cause of all causes.
Not necessarily.
Wait a second, we're holding you in the background for just one moment. He says everything comes from illusion. Then when pressed, or where does illusion come from? He said, well, it just comes from Brahman. So Jai Gopal rightly jumps on him and says, well, then you accept Brahman as the cause of everything. Good answer, because then all you have to do is, now the question is not whether or not there's a cause of all causes, but just what the nature of Brahman is. And Brahman is simply the Sanskrit word for God. You fell into it, buddy.
Yeah. It was those sweet balls that did it. I lost my intelligence by flying
out of the
Well, you don't have to accept that the illusion was created by Brahman, but illusion is the ultimate cause. In other words, you're saying the definition here, the cause of all things, but where do you distinguish the cause and the effect? Isn't the effect in the cause and the cause is in the effect? So where is this argument of the cause of everything come from?
First of all, before you do that, even if you accept illusion as the source of everything, then you accept that there's a cause of all causes.
Illusion.
We just have to discuss what the nature of that so-called illusion is.
And that's what I'm saying. God is.
There's some sort of a reservoir in your mind. There's some sort of reservoir that everything is illusion, and there's some sort of reservoir for all these variegated illusions. So we just have to discuss what that nature of that reservoir is. I'll get you to Krishna that way if you want. You're still accepting that there's a reservoir of everything. You're giving it the name illusion. I'm giving it the name God. But your approach is bewildering, because you're trying to say that things which are insubstantial or which are substantial come from something which has no substantial existence. Just to pursue it a little further, Prabhupada gives several examples of this when you deal with the Mayavadis. It's in 87th chapter of Krishna book, Prayers by the Personified Vedas, that someone gives the argument that of mistaking some ordinary metal for gold, or oyster shell underwater for gold.
You say you're thinking that God is the cause of all causes, but really it's not God. Everything's illusion, and you're accepting it to be real. So Prabhupada argues that you can't argue, that you can't say that someone mistakes an oyster shell for gold. That may be a mistake, but it doesn't mean that the oyster shell is nothing. It doesn't mean that it's an illusion.
The perception is real.
The perception is real. Or the perception is faulty. You're seeing the oyster shell to be gold. It's not gold. But that doesn't mean it's nothing. It's something. So it requires a source. If I have a bad dream, that's an illusion. But it's not nothing. It's something. It comes from a source. You know, I ate too many pakoras last night or something. It has a cause. So if someone argues that way, it's all coming from illusion. Then we push this point. This is the point to push on the Mayavadis. Where does your illusion come from? If everything's illusion, where does illusion come from? Or if everything comes from void, and now we're in illusion, so we don't see it, where does the illusion come from? Everything's one and we're seeing varieties because of illusion, where does illusion come from? This question they cannot answer. Mayavadis cannot say where illusion comes from. If everything is one, everything is void, then where do you get illusion? As soon as there's void and illusion, that's two. As soon as there's oneness and illusion, that's two. They can't say, where does illusion come from? So there's a source of everything. Man comes from that source by definition. Therefore there's a necessity. There must be God.
Well, I mean, this concept of cause and effect, that has been questioned by scientists.
You're saying there's no cause and effect?
Yeah. In the quantum physics, they have that argument that the cause is in the effect, and the effect is in the cause. So you can't say that one comes from the other, like that. So
the scientists, they say, you mean the scientist comes from his father, and the father comes from the scientist?
That's right.
Is that what they argue?
That's right.
I come from my father, and my father comes from me?
Yes, that's true.
Does that make sense to you?
No, it doesn't make sense on the... But it makes sense on the micro level, not on the macro level.
I don't...
The two
fragmented.
Well, even accepting that we're talking on the macro level anyway, because we're talking about big scale, where did everything come from? So on the big scale, at least, that's macro.
Everything is also small.
All right. So if there's both, big and small, even if we accept that the small things don't require causes, the big things do. So there must be some cause. What is that cause? Taking your weird argument that big things need a cause and small things don't. So all right, where did all those big things come from? We'll deal with the small stuff later. Where did all that big stuff, all those planets and things, come from?
No, the point is that they're always there. Cause and effect is always there.
Where did cause and effect come from?
It doesn't exist.
Cause and effect doesn't exist.
No, it's there in...
First, it's at first, what each is in the other, and then they don't exist.
That's right.
It's not right. It's not right. This is
word trouble.
You want to give up cause and effect. Here's some poison. Drink it. There won't be any effect. You're so convinced of your micro, I'm only giving you a few micrograms. Drink it. Let's see how much courage you have in your philosophy.
Well, I'm sorry.
One
thing I came up and argued was a situation where like a person doesn't even really want to know the whether God exists or not. I mean, he just like is careless about it. What would be the answer to that?
Well, that's you can answer that also. You may decide, after speaking with a person for some time, that the gentleman with whom you're speaking is a hopeless case. Under those circumstances, give him some prasadam. Hare Krishna.
Vas.
But let's say,
if he's a hopeless case, if he's not going to listen to anything you say, then remember, one of the purposes of this course is to determine when argument is useful and whether some other strategy, when some other strategy will be more effective. Sometimes argument is the best way to go. Sometimes give up argument and offer the man a sweet ball.
How do you bow out of such an entanglement without losing face in front of your audience, especially if you're in a student group or something? How do you do it in such a way that you don't lose face?
You want to answer your own question?
I'd like to know from your experience.
Well, there are various ways to do it. I would say end with a strong argument. Give strong arguments, first of all. Recapitulate your strong argument to end up and summarize his position and your position, and then say, but I don't think we're going to get any further discussing this way. But here, you know, I don't know what you think about our philosophy, but I suspect I know what you'll think about our food. Here, take one of these. End up strong. Don't wait till he's smashed you on some point and then say, well, anyway, here, try something wonderful. End strong, and then bow out. Yes.
Didn't Prabhupada use one argument about with a like a person that's like a confirmed atheist? He's like, the one argument about the wallet. Well, if you know, it doesn't matter, you know.
Giriraj used that. In Boston Commons, when some man said that everything is illusion, then Giriraj said, then why don't you give me your wallet? Man, he was so convinced of his principles, he gave his wallet. Later he had to come begging for train fare. But I'll tell you one other incident. In the last Bombay Pandal, Srila Prabhupada was very ill. Actually, he was so weak that Pavananda and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I think, had to carry him onto the stage. And Prabhupada was sitting on his asana, just slumped over. And he had one of the devotees read the translation in purport. And then Prabhupada began speaking. And he began speaking in sort of a labored voice, very low and slowly. And as he spoke, he began gradually gathering momentum. So at the end of the lecture, Prabhupada was just roaring. Just completely roaring. And then he called for questions. And the questions were so... Answers to the questions were so powerful. One man was saying something to the effect that, prove to me by logic that there is God. Prabhupada said, you do not know what is logic. And then the man said, but... can you prove by logic, Prabhupada said, you do not know what is logic. And the man was pushing, Prabhupada said, if there is a father, if there is a mother, and there are children, there must be a father. That is logic. He said, so Mother Nature is there, children are there, living entities, there must be a father. That is God. That is logic. Audience was just completely won over. That's a very good argument. And you can just push it and push it and push it. Challenge them. You show me where there's a mother and children and no father. That's logic. Okay, we'll look at our handouts and further lessons tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.